Welcome to Wombat Radio. Today we're talking with Rhianna Newton. Hi, Rhi.
Hi, Matt.
And we only just actually finished talking about Artwork, which is a Branch Nebula piece that opened on Wednesday, whereby they put out ads just for temp workers, is that right?
Yeah, ads on the internet.
On Gumtree and on things like that, Gumtree.com. And then people show up half an hour before the show and then they get given instructions and they're told that they're going to be on a stage and that there will be an audience.
Yeah.
But they're not prepped or rehearsed or upskilled or anything like that.
Yeah.
Maybe we can come back to it because we just talked about it a lot, unless you've got something you want to say.
No, I think it's interesting to think about how much of a work is in the actual premise, like what you just said, like the premise and that moment of the beginning of these people getting their contracts.
Yeah.
So exciting. And even as a thing that's marketed and that you know you're going to see this sort of problem be dealt with for an hour is... I think it's interesting, like, I don't know, from my point of view, and also as I've been dealing with my solo work, like, thinking, what is it that I'm inviting people to?
Yeah, what's your premise?
What's the premise? Like, are they just coming to see, like, a dance work?
A dancer do some dancing.
Or is there something in the way that it's marketed that is actually, like a bite or, like, has some sort of, like...
Hook
to it that the people already are thinking about it and imagining the work.
It's true.
Before they enter it.
I was at the physio the other day and I was introduced to the word prehab. And it's rehab that you do before the surgery. So it's post the injury, but before the surgery that then you need to have rehab after.
Yep.
And so maybe you're just talking about we're discussing a work post seeing it. But the hook is the ability to discuss the work before seeing it.
Yeah, and I think that's also really interesting because, like, that whole, like, imagining what the work will be...
Yeah.
...is also... Is the
part of the... Yes.
Totally. Because then it's... You take those ideas in, you either get really disappointed because it's not like that, and you're like, wow, man, I should have made that work.
Yeah.
Or it's kind of like, it's the kind of imaginary world that you kind of make sense of what you see through as it happens. Or it totally, like, shits on your imagination and you're really overwhelmed.
Yeah. So is the... If there's no premise as hook to come and see the show... Is the default premise some dancers doing some dancing for a dance show?
I don't know. I think often it's a sexy body.
Oh, yeah. So that's your solo that we're coming to see?
No.
That's the premise for the solo?
No, I think I could have done a better job at maybe thinking about prior to marketing it what my hook was. And I think it's only in hindsight from the process so far that I'm thinking about what... Is it that I'm actually, when it comes to that kind of surface with the audience, what is it that I'm actually offering? I know from, like, the research and the process what I'm interested in, like, sharing with an audience and how I'm interested in engaging with them, but how to kind of sort of compact that into something that is a hook. I don't know. I think it's still a question for me.
Yeah. I should ask, though, the base question of the whole podcast series.
Yeah.
And the base question is, what are you busy with?
Right now?
Yeah. It can be right now.
Sure.
Or it can be just the thing that won't leave you alone. Maybe there's an idea that keeps nagging at you. Or... It could be actually it's tax time and I'm busy with assembling my receipts.
I think I'm thinking about... I was just in Avignon in France at the festival. And I think I was a part of a seminar and we were talking a lot about work. And the conversation started to really that move. They were quite rigorous and very thorough. We spent about 3 hours talking about each of the works that we saw. And often in that situation, the works became much more interesting, or the conversation about the works was much more interesting than the work itself. In some situations, that wasn't quite the case. But like the conversation really moved to like, why is that work programmed? What is it actually doing in the world? Like, what, you know, why do we have these festivals? What's the history of this festival? It was set up after the Second World War in order to create better social cohesion and connection between the classes. What does that do now in 2015? Is it about education still, or is it about multiculturalism, or is it about politics, but anyway, it was really interesting to go through like a rigorous process that actually kind of really pinned certain works to like, oh, that's a work that is educating Europeans about Muslim family life. That's a work that's really simplified and is giving, telling the story of a really general experience of war that's not specific to any place or any culture. And maybe that's, you know, a useful thing for some people to be able to feel those emotions if they haven't felt it themselves. And I think that's made me kind of a little bit more reflective of what my work's, you know, that question of what my work's doing in the world, and how often do I like extend my kind of thought process towards that end of the kind of spectrum. And I think that's very also connected to my questions about what can dance do.
Yeah.
And is the theatre an interesting place for dance, or has something about the nature of dance actually been lost in adopting the kind of mechanisms of theatre and spectators, like, is dance, you know,
to do,
is it fundamentally participatory? How can you create an experience of that without that is really generous and doesn't make people do things they don't feel comfortable doing, so I think that's where my head is, and I don't know that that's connected to a specific project or if that's just general thoughts.
How big do you think it can get?
What
dance can do?
I personally think it's huge what dance can do, because I think it's dealing with the kinds of intelligences and sensitivities that are beyond language. So therefore it's sort of common, has some commonalities or some, the sort of empathy or something that's built into dance, or watching another body and paying attention to what that body is saying. It's the same as like when you first meet someone, you kind of already have a feeling, an impression for who that person is and what they might be like before the conversation begins. And I think that's the kind of intelligence that dance operates on, and I think that's very important for when we're looking for ways to be connected across different cultures.
And what about choreography as different to dance? Because I think I believe that most of the power of dance is its participatory engagement. But I don't think that about choreography. I wonder if we're talking about choreography or if we're talking about dance, and if choreography is a theatre version of dance. And if
I don't know, I definitely have realised that I've been using the word dance a lot recently rather than choreography, and I think it's something to do with authoring and choosing where that authorship sits, and whether it's sort of about me having this understanding of something that I then organize through dancing for an experience, or whether it's the authorship is in the like bringing of these group of people together, and the dance is what happens when those particular people or parts meet.
The thing I think about where they collide is in maybe choreography as participatory events when they're super powerful. I just think about ceremonies and that everybody learns the thing that they need to do and it all needs to be done without speaking.
Yeah.
And everyone's looking around for the cue of when to break the thing or throw the thing or kneel or stand.
Yeah. The choreography is in the kind of order or the rules somehow that we agree upon.
Yeah, and it sets up a frame to be together.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about dance and choreography and ceremony and knowing the rules of a ceremony as a way to be together in a non-spoken way.
Yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily about knowing the rules, but a kind of like, you know how when you are somewhere that you don't know, you kind of just like look for the social cues from the people around you, and you're like, okay, obviously the entrance is over there.
Yeah.
I'm just going to follow this mass of people.
That happened at Artwork. So there were, I don't know, 400 or 500 people in the space. And after the bow, like in the audience.
Really?
So, yeah. And then.
Was it just one seating bank or was it
one seating bank.
Okay.
And then after the bow and the lights were all up, the working lights, then about 10 people eventually left and went out the door while the performers were picking up ping pong balls.
Yeah.
And then a few other people started helping them pick up, and then a mass about, I don't know, 100 people entered the stage and started picking up ping pong balls.
Yep.
And then there was about 50 or 60 of us left in the audience just watching all of that as well. And so you kind of were forced into choosing your...
Yeah, it was quite an awkward moment.
Participation.
Yeah, yeah. Similar thing happened, but because we were only like 30 people in the audience on the dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we actually left and one of the performers left with us.
Oh, really?
And just left everyone else to continue picking up ping pong balls and had his cash in his...
Oh, because he got... Yeah, right. Okay.
Cash in his hand.
They changed that for our show. They didn't pay them on stage.
Ah, that was one of the most irksome parts for me.
I was curious about that. I thought that it would have been one of the most provocative as well. And then it changed to opening night.
Okay.
I have to ask.
How did they do it on opening night?
They just didn't pay them during the show.
Ah, okay. It was really awkward because like they were standing in the line and everyone was clapping. And then as they paid the first person, everyone was kind of like, yeah! And then it was like we had to continue to clap as each person got their money. And it was like, I'm clapping because they're giving you money.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. But so provocative, so much more provocative than so much that I've seen.
Yeah. I don't know how it was for your show, but I also had some moments where I felt quite sorry for the performers because I felt like they were left in quite vulnerable situations at points.
Mm.
Maybe that was just a bit of a few more gaps or something in the show that I saw. But I had the feeling that there could have been quite easy solutions to those gaps to keep a kind of fuller, more like powering forward sort of event, but rather than moments of kind of like dipping away and people sort of floating a bit lost on stage or dancing very awkwardly.
Yeah, I did think that it's quite ironic that they're hiring people that are looking for work to perform in their show, and most of the performers that I know are looking for work.
Sure.
And we can't get work now in a performance.
yeah, I think that's an interesting contradiction. But I felt like they came up with some really brilliant solutions for how you can create something that's really powerful with a normal person, like using a cricket bat to hit a thing that makes sound. That was brilliant. But
it's just, I guess it's translating a lot of film techniques to live environment. So in film, you would line the sound up with the action.
Yeah.
Post.
Yeah.
And you would slow motion something or
yeah.
do close-ups or whatever. And they just managed to do a lot of that live.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
To back up or in sometimes completely save the performance. Like the performance came through the amplification
yeah.
of the ordinary.
Sure, sure, sure. Rather than simplifying the some sort of intense event or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we're often through the, like, we're often working in simplification or distillation.
Yeah.
Especially, I feel like you more so than me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of your things are solos and they're with premise, or with like distilled premise.
Yeah. I don't, yeah, I mean, I think, so, like, I don't know, also with this solo, I think the thing that's interesting is that it is improvised and, like, it's a situation that you can walk in and into and it's very particular to who's there and how I'm feeling on that day and... Like, I don't know, I at least hope that it starts to kind of catch something of that real event into the thing that happens and that it only kind of exists in that circulation between the dancing and the audience and the fact that they are willing to kind of go through that process with me. Yeah, rather than kind of saying I have this thing that's about this other thing and you're going to watch it.
Rather than representation, you mean?
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. In terms of thinking about what is my dance doing, that's one of the things that really excites me. If I maybe stretch the term of dance, and if I think about choreography, what is my choreography doing that really excites me about maybe getting on this freshly squeezed situation where I'll be working with or learning from and being exposed to a place where the choreography of commodities and currencies and communities really moves. It's like there's no bigger thing than those things, and if you can move those things around, that's the biggest choreography maybe that you can do. Like, it's bigger than causing an earthquake or something.
Yeah, but I also think it's a choreography that's always there and is always happening.
Yes.
And it's really interesting as a choreographer to kind of go look, currently there's this much money going from here to here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's this much soil moving from here to here right now.
Right now. Yeah, there's this many cows moving from here to here right now. Yeah. But then, I don't know, I don't want to be commenting.
Yeah.
Even when I make dance on dancers for stage or when I choreograph on dancers for stage, I'm not commenting on something else, I hope.
No, there's some sort of like
the thing is still
presentation
the thing.
Of fact, but it's.
But I wonder how I could actually be the author, because when I choreograph, I'm very much stuck in the ego of the author. It's old school, but it's like the reason that I'm involved. And so it's interesting to me to think. Some of the biggest concerts that I'm aware of are the Andre Rieu concerts. That dude, the fiddling dude, the violin dude.
Uh-huh.
And if I think of dance on that scale, then that's still not as big as a population moving because the legislation has changed, because a market has collapsed.
Sure.
And it's a little bit, it's almost a little bit on the scale of what supervillains think about. Like, how can you... Yeah, but they're usually doing it for profit, whereas what would I be doing it for? I don't know. But what is my dance doing? It would be far more...
Do you feel like you need... But, like, that sort of mass needs to be represented in the amount of bodies? Or is it more...
Yeah, I don't know. Because I could think about it in a whole different way. I could think about the commercialization of hip-hop and then its spread around the world and how there are bodies doing movements in Cambodia that were conceived...
Oh,
in
totally, yeah.
New York. And that only happened because there was a commodity invented.
Yes, and those movements were maybe originating from a culture that's originally much closer to Cambodia than New York.
Yeah, but I don't know, because I do care about what is my dance doing.
Yeah, but I also don't think it's something that we... as the artists actually have any control over. And I also don't think it will do the thing that you potentially set out
to do. No, you're right.
Because if I think about this work, this one that was like a sort of a portrait of a Muslim family having dinner. What a European programmer sees in that and goes, this is a really interesting insight into the kind of precariousness between sort of more contemporary traditions that are influenced from the West and more cultural traditions that are really important. Like, that's a really interesting thing for European audiences to stomach and just feel familiar with. Whereas I'm sure that the creator of that work is maybe thinking more about his specific family and maybe even has like a particular moment or something in mind, and I don't know, has much more, isn't necessarily thinking the European audience needs a portrait of Arab culture. I think it's like good to think about it, but I also don't think I can, like, we can control it.
Yeah. That's such a bummer. Because I also don't want to just what's the word? Surrender.
No. But I also think that's like, if you aim west, you might head south and there might be really great things.
Like Wollongong.
Yep.
On your way to Blacktown, you end up in Wollongong and you have a swim and it's great. Did we work out what your dance is doing? Or what you think about it doing?
I think I have a little bit of hindsight now and I can see a little bit. I think what it does is obviously set up a situation that's a little bit difficult. I'm repeating and there's obviously like a little bit of discomfort in that, but because the setting is so sort of small and you can really see me very closely and I can see you very closely, somehow you become implicated in that,
in your survival.
But I think because the work kind of contracts down into like a small repetition that's really hard and then it opens back up again into a 1 minute dance, there's some kind of like a little bit of breath in there that has some small rewards, or even like the moments of break when it kind of, when I fail or something, there's hopefully a like a group understanding of like, oh, she's really losing it, oh, poor her, or oh, wow, she's really doing it right now, she's mastering it. Yeah, I don't know, maybe it's almost like sport or something, like you come to understand the rules of the game and you can kind of like watch it a little bit more like football or something, like, wow, she's going really well, great, or, oh shit, she's really bad.
And it's just about making clear your intention then?
Yeah, or kind of like, I guess, understanding the system or the rules that are like,
it comes back to the premise.
Yeah.
Having a premise as a hook for before and during and after.
Yeah.
And maybe there's no excitement if there's no space for or need for the viewer to be with you or something. Like if somehow you make the viewer redundant by your high level of skill and rehearsal. Yeah,
I think, I don't know. I always, after most shows, I really, like, there's a kind of point in the, about halfway through where I'm like, oh, this is really hard and I should really just stop. And then the rest, the other half, there's some sort of reward in. And I think from talking to people that there's a similar process for the audience of like, it's really difficult. And then there's some, but in that process, there's something that you go through or you get to the other, you go over a hill or something. And it's kind of, whether it's enjoyable or not, but you do go through something together. And I don't know. I don't know that that's necessarily the kind of work that I want to continue to make, though, because I don't think, I think there's something like, as a young artist, like doing something that's difficult kind of feels necessarily in order to make yourself feel worthwhile in somehow. Yeah, yeah, and
it's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think there's more.
You think you might have graduated from that school?
Gentler things to find.
Do you know what they look like? What they feel like? You got any inkling?
Yeah. I think some of them started to come up in that, the group piece.
Do you know I stole something from your group piece? What was it called?
Body Disassemblies.
Body Disassemblies, yeah. That part where they're moving in super slow motion together. That's how I finished my Evan Bow commission.
To come into the same position?
No, because we couldn't quite get there. But I just stole the idea that you can hide your hand behind you and then slow motion move, and it looks like you're just slow motion moving on like a Lazy Susan or a jewellery display cabinet or something. But it's just after a section where they come at the audience with flips and gainers and back salts and stuff, and then at a certain cue everybody dives into that slow motion position and then it blacks out and then it's the last minute of pump and jams. So it was an inspiration.
Cool. No, I think there was something of like switching between modes or something in that work that I think was starting to like fast to slow, sound to movement, that was like, I don't know, like sharpening my sensitivity somehow to things that were happening.
I want to ask you, I asked you on the night in the Q&A, but I want to ask you on the podcast about, or maybe not retrospectively, but looking to the future, because your sensitivity is being sharpened in that, if you think you'll get to things where you'll start saying no to more things, like, I don't want you to build in volume and speed and then reach a peak and then slow down. That is not allowed. Everything else is allowed, but that's not allowed. Or no bum rolls ever allowed. Because I imagine there's an amount of play that's going on with constructing.
Yeah, I mean, they're improvising.
Yeah, but in response to your structure.
My structure, yeah. So yeah, of course there is, like, you know, in the first section they start rolling along the floor, so of course there's an instruction that you can't stand up.
Okay, but then there's this, like, there's aesthetics about rolling along the floor. I wonder how specific you're going to get.
Yeah, well, I think what my interest is how, like, you don't need to say what's not allowed, because you work in such a way that feeds this this thing, so that everything sort of like, which is where I was working with this idea of the living machine or the living organism. So you start working in this way, and that opens up this possibility, and then from there so that becomes your new reality. You've added in this thing, which then so there's some sort of organic progression, like, oh, rolling, stopping, rolling again, adding some sound, but rather than all the things that you could do, that it makes sense to go from this thing to this thing, and that kind of helps this system stay alive somehow. And then I feel like, ah, I'm thirsty, so I add in that bit, so that it's more about how does something grow than...
But I wonder if you want to fight the natural progression.
No, I actually think, which is kind of contrary to the recent way I've been working with repetition, which is like, be really pure and like almost like try and be like a machine, like just do exactly that thing that you just did. Whereas this is a little bit more like, oh, what do I need to sustain? How can I be natural about this next thing?
I think the thing that I find, I don't know, that sticks out or is offensive is, do you want this? Okay. Is that there is a natural progression of energy exertion.
Yeah.
That people have, which is...
little to a lot.
Little to a lot. Yeah. And then reach exhaustion and then stop and then sigh out. And that is so closely related with documentary specials of animal mating.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
I can't not see that. And so I would put a limit on, don't do the animal mating energy curve. Do all the other accumulation possibilities, but the thing that offends me, because I don't want that on stage representing me.
Yeah, right.
As the choreographer.
But I think that's such an inbuilt curve. And I was like totally aware of totally that when inbuilt. I started, of like, oh, this is like totally like a, you know, sex
curve.
Trajectory.
Yeah.
Also because it's repetition. But like, it's also what naturally happens when, even like on a more cellular or like chemical kind of level, when things go from being far apart to close together, or like two chemicals sort of reacting together. I don't know.
I guess I'm just talking about, if I'm ever using structures and I want responses from people, I want them in a way that's from them, but not going to offend me and give me the stuff that I don't want.
Sure.
Because I know that I'm going to have to sit back and watch it as a viewer. And so there's like a graduation from beginning with getting them to be responsive to the point where I want them to be, to do what they need to do so that they can, or me telling them what they need to hear so that they can look the way that I need them to look.
Yeah.
For an audience to have the experience that I want.
Yeah.
I just wonder about that. Like, where's your hierarchy?
Yeah.
Especially because you're not the performer in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in what the performer wants to do.
Okay. We have a basic difference.
Yeah.
In the studio or on the stage as well?
Both. But I think I'm interested in creating a history of understanding that what they're going to do on the stage is pretty, you know, fairly familiar.
It's cohesive at least.
Yeah.
And does that stand for something like artwork, where they are not performers, where they are not performers? Are you still interested in what the person?
Sure. Yeah. Does? Totally. I think I find that state of being on stage, of like, where you don't know what you're about to do, and you can, it's really honest. This sort of like uncertainty, I think, is really interesting. It's like a totally seductive state for a performer to be in, whereas, and as a viewer, I'm so much more interested in if there's this honest kind of place of like, shit, I really don't know what I'm about to do. I'm so much more engaged than if I'm confronted by someone that knows what they're about to do.
Yeah, right, that's completely solid.
Yeah. It kind of feels like you're watching the past performing.
It's true. You are watching the past. Or a recreation of it, at least. But I wonder... So I wonder about the limits of that, though. Like, can you... Can I, as a performer, invite you in to see my vulnerability and so that you experience my excellent predetermined execution of what's about to happen in a much more real way?
So I think very good performers, it's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And they're really honestly going through those motions with a kind of so deep inside them that they are really present and dealing with it in the conditions that are there in that performance. Whereas a bad performer is like, this is the moment where I'm going to put my leg really high and it's going to be really impressive. Here I go, and oh shit, it wasn't as good as last night.
Yeah, there's the thought choreography that needs to go along with the body choreography. So did we work out what your dance is doing?
I think we've like circled around in such a way that someone might be able to guess what it's maybe doing or give their own opinion.
Yeah. That's true. Let's not prescribe it. How are you feeling about performing next week?
In about 3 weeks' time.
Three weeks.
I need to get fit before I do it.
Performance fit.
Yeah. Because I really don't want to injure my knee again.
Injuries, age and injuries. And you feel like it's yours?
The work?
Yeah.
The solo?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I know it very well, and it feels like quite a revealing and exposing thing to do. That's quite vulnerable.
Did you have any other real insights on your Avignon? You're already speaking about how the performances became much more somehow
interesting,
relevant, or interesting. Yeah. And I wonder then if performance is almost only ever an instigation or a provocation for discussion.
And
why try so hard to be so good at executing a head spin if the real change that can happen, or what the dance really does, is get someone.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in some situations I often thought a work was just really boring and we spent 3 hours talking about it in order to find and essentially transferring our own points of interest onto the things that were there, and therefore it became kind of interesting to each person in a different way. But, you know, I also think that's what a performance is. It happens in the space between the spectator and the performer. So it's always about kind of what you're projecting into it anyway.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder if we didn't have to manufacture so much interest, what would we be interested in? Like, would we just find other shit that was not boring? Would we go to shows that are not boring? Or would we leave shows that are boring? Not that boring's the worst thing that a show can be, but...
I think it's a bit of a... What do I think? I think if I want to not be bored and want to really have my brain, like, totally sucked into a different world, I know movies are very good at doing that, and I kind of enter into this other landscape, and when it finishes, I often feel like a little bit like disembodied or a bit lost, and a bit like I have to like recall what my purpose is and what I'm doing and where I am and right, and then there's this quite sort of like little cliff that I have to like jump off to kind of go like, okay, right, and I'm back in my world, and I have to like, yes, I am a human and I am doing some things. Whereas if I'm in a performance that's a little bit boring, I have this wonderful time like of, like, I don't know, thinking about stuff, and I don't know, yeah, and often come out feeling like, I don't know, I mean, if the work's really shit, then I get angry. But if it's like the kind of slightly meditative boring, then I am sometimes a bit thankful for the space to think.
It's quite a premium, though, to pay for that, for space to think, isn't it?
Yeah, ideally. It's not a very expensive work.
Because I remember once we had family in town, and Mum organised that we all went on a jumping crocodile cruise to see the crocodiles jumping out of the river, and it was about a half hour cruise, and she fell asleep because she was so exhausted. And it's true that there was no other time she could have gotten sleep, but that nap cost the ticket price. But maybe the nap was more beneficial than seeing the crocodiles.
She probably wouldn't have fallen asleep if she was at home.
No, because she's just shit to do.
Yeah.
It's true, you probably wouldn't think if you were just doing errands or just waiting in traffic. You only think because you're entering some kind of meditative space.
Yeah, and there's something about a performance where you're kind of like in this space of going like, I wonder what this thing is, and I wonder why they're doing that. And in that process, somehow, like, even if I don't come at any answer of what that is, something in my brain kind of... And I think also because I've seen a lot of performance work, I don't get anxious about the fact that I should figure out the answer to that question, so I kind of let my brain